Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in to another Red Ice interview. Great to have you with us once again. If you are new, make sure you check out our websites, redice.tv and redicemembers.com. Today we have Irish investigative journalist. She's independent today, but she has a foot in the mainstream journalist field going way back. Dorothy joins us from Ireland. Hi, Gemma. How's it going? Good to see you.
Hi, Henrik. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you bet. Great to finally have you on. I think we reached out to you probably a year, maybe more ago. I can't even remember, and we just haven't been able to get it together. But it's great to have you here. And it's a perfect time, too, by the way, because there's a lot of things happening in Ireland. We always like to keep an eye on that. And one of the things that's been popping up more recently is, of course, some of the mass protests that we've seen. A lot of people on the streets in Ireland are mobilizing. You've been out covering some of this. You have clashes with police, as you have peaceful protesters who's trying to push back against some of the open borders and the immigration issue over there. So tell us a little bit, give us like a 10,000 feet view, if you will, of what's going on right now in Ireland.
The annihilation of our country, basically. And I can see, really, at this stage, I don't want to be pessimistic, but it's not looking good for Ireland. Ireland, I think, above all of the EU countries, has been targeted more heavily by mass immigration in particular. I mean, every day we hear stories of thousands of Ukrainians moving in here to a tiny little village, you know, on the Atlantic coast or wherever, and it's relentless. As far as my protesting days are concerned, they are over. I objected strongly to the lockdown. In fact, myself and my colleague, John Waters, we took one of the first court cases against the lockdown in the world in April 2020. And I had been, you know, in the conspiracy world, I suppose, for a few years before that. As an investigative journalist, and had been looking at various things such as vaccines and fluoride in the water and all of this sort of stuff, wind turbines, etc. So when the lockdowns happened, I knew what they were up to, and I did, you know, try to get people to rally people at that point to oppose the lockdowns in a non-violent way and stand up against the checkpoints, you know, where we were faced with checkpoints, because Ireland had the toughest lockdown in the EU that's been established, and we had the longest one. So I noticed, though, very quickly, Henrik, that I was being surrounded by actors, crisis actors, I would say CIA-funded types, operatives. And they were trying to, I suppose, take over. And I noticed some of them were becoming violent, and I would be extremely pacifist in my approach. I'm, you know, for me, saving Ireland the only way is by going back to our Catholic faith. That's my biggest priority now for the country. But I stood up against the lockdown. I paid a heavy price. I now have, I can't remember, 4 or 5 criminal convictions because I was we were using banners during the lockdown to try and warn people that the vaccine was coming. And I was assaulted by a police officer one day. And that resulted in, I mean, obviously I didn't react, but I was doing a stream at the time. A live stream, and I was talking about the corruption in the Irish police, which is one of my areas of expertise. And I was assaulted by this individual who had a knife on him at the time, and that resulted in me getting 3 convictions. I also got convictions for moving around the country during the lockdown. And I could see, really, there was no one else in the country getting these convictions of a high profile nature, you know. So I came to understand that the people that I thought were genuine were actually not. And since then, the entire protest movement in Ireland has been taken over by violent thugs, I would call them. And I don't believe that they're representative of the Irish people.
Really? Okay. Yeah, because, I mean, I've seen some at least, and maybe that's, you know, this was during the COVID times, so maybe that was something different. I'm not sure if it's the same now with some of the anti-immigration protests that we're seeing, the anti-open borders and really anti-replacement protests. At least what I've seen, a lot of that has been very peaceful, you know, Irish people, but you have the Gardaí coming after people. They're targeting them. They're the ones being violent against them and stuff like that. But you probably have a little bit more on the ground experience than that, and you know what individuals you are talking about. But most of what I've seen have seemed pretty peaceful, at least, right? So
no, there's no doubt that the bulk of the people probably are genuine. But unfortunately, as we know, the Marxist Jewish tactic is to infiltrate the leadership. So what will happen is you'll have the people who are trying to mobilize the protest taking over. And I mean, my opinion is there's no point in going to migrant centers. This should be taken to the door of government.
Right. Yeah.
But I really believe until you can get maybe 100,000 on the streets at the parliament, which is called Dáil Éireann, or at the office of the prime minister, there's no point. You know, you can stand outside a hostel with 100 Pakistanis in it all night, but that's pointless because they just move them around. So protests have not worked. They've throughout the history of Europe resulted in revolutionary actions, in violence, and you know, they're usually infiltrated by Freemasons who create this violence. And, you know, so my approach now to people, my advice to people is you have to be an army of one. You have to make your own home, your own property, your own family. That has to be your priority. And then your broader parish, your neighbors, as many people as you can get on board, protect your and waken up your own area. I hate the word community. Like, it's a word we never used in Ireland. It's a real lefty word. I would rather use parish, but that's what I mean. But standing outside migrant centres, it's doing nothing. It's just creating more violence. It's having absolutely no effect.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's true. I agree with you in the sense that it's not... The migrants is just a tool. They're just a weapon, essentially, used against us. And not all of them, obviously, but many of them, they act in such a manner that, you know, that evokes, you know, responses from us and stuff like that. But obviously, exactly. I mean, the problem is the people that are letting them in, those who have both advocated for this, those who have propagandized our nations, in some cases over decades, to get us to kind of drop our guards and think that it's immoral if we don't let these people in and we have to replace ourselves. We have to, you know, feed them and fund them and take care of them. And then, of course, look at all the problems that it's causing, right? But yeah, politicians, lobby groups, people behind the scenes, that's where we need to take it. But that's very hard so far to do. A lot of people are like, well, you know, then you're talking about getting into politics and getting into people into political positions and stuff like that. I think you need to fight on every single level that you possibly can. If you can, you know, if you can fund somebody today that gets an education, gets civic studies you educate them to go into politics, and maybe in 10-15 years you can have that person placed in a position, hopefully somewhere where they can start inflicting change. But it's just I know what you mean. It feels like such a gridlock and an impossibility of sorts. It almost feels like
I don't believe in politics at all anymore. Yep. I think that's been well and truly proven. Like the march of the Marxists through the institutions mm-hmm. has been incredibly successful. They control all of the institutions of the state. Yes, we could say let's spend the next 20 years trying to infiltrate the institutions ourselves. I would rather say let's just bring down those institutions. Let's just ignore them, turn our backs on them. We don't need them. All those institutions are about destroying our lives, stealing our wealth, taking tax from us, which is being used to kill us through deadly vaccines, a health service that is funded by big pharma, pushing pharmaceutical products, which only end up in the long run making us sicker. There's nothing that the state has to offer us. The institutions of the state are corrupt from top to bottom. And this is the lesson of the last 100 years. You know, so I would much rather focus back on small, independent, family-run businesses, holistic approach to health, to stop people paying tax in every which way, to continue the cash economy, make it be it black market, whatever.
Yeah.
It's I mean, maybe it's different in Scandinavia, but Ireland is such a small country. We can do it on our own. We're very agricultural, rural economy. We never industrialized, which is a good thing in many ways, because it means that we still have that agricultural agrarian backbone where most of us come from the farm, or we're one generation removed from the farm. Mm-hmm. So that should be a big point in our favor, that we should be able to produce our own food. And, you know, we've a lot of turf bogs, which, you know, are very good in terms of providing heat for us if we need to go independent fuel wise. And we can sustain ourselves as an island nation, no question. You know, we're surrounded by food. So that would be my approach, you know. But as I say, we never industrialized. So that is going to stand to us as a country.
Yeah, a couple of points there, which is interesting, because now, of course, you have all these big, you know, transnational corporations in Ireland. They moved in, almost a couple of decades now, 15 years ago, maybe something like that, to 2010-ish. Maybe it's earlier, but I just remember that change in Ireland. They dropped the corporate taxes, and tons of these big corporations, you reminded me, some of the big pharma corporations moved in, but a lot of the big tech corporations as well, such as Google and IBM, I think Microsoft have a foot over there as well. And you saw things slowly starting to change in Ireland when they moved in. And as you said, I wouldn't be surprised if with that you have other interests, such as, for example, why not? You know, America has always been meddling in all other countries, right? You have CIA coming in there, or whomever they're using at that point, to make sure essentially that the progression of the country doesn't get away, that this doesn't get out of hand. They've invested a lot of these corporations are in there now. You can't all of a sudden have a political system where they started voting, you know, far right or something, or nationalistic or patriotic parties starting to ascend, and all of a sudden they say, you know what, we should get these corporations out. This is just a little colony for them. And again, even just to clarify, when we say America, I mean, that's just another, I prefer calling them global homo, right? It's just it's a transnational clique right now of individuals. The Black Rocks, you know, the Vanguards and these kinds of big corporations, a lot of people at the top. But anyway, I saw that change in Ireland. And then with that, you saw a lot of, all of a sudden, a lot of promotion for open borders and pro-immigration and things like that. And it's not that was the death nail in the coffin, so to speak. It was there for a long time before. As you said, the long march through the institutions have happened essentially in every Western country. It's basically the same all over right now. But it was very drastic. It was very quick, like it was in Sweden. I'm in America right now, but obviously I'm very familiar with Sweden, having grown up there and living there for most of my life. And the same thing there, really. It was like, for the longest time, it was ethnically homogenous. We were more or less independent. We didn't pick a side. You know, look at us today. Completely open borders, joining NATO. We're as deeply embedded into global home as possibly can be. It's a disaster.
Yes, I often draw parallels between Sweden and Ireland because we're very similar, not necessarily from a social perspective, certainly, you know, in that we were extremely homogenous. Like in Ireland, when I was growing up, if there was an Indian walking down the street, like your eyes would be out on stalks. Now you'd be lucky to go into Dublin city centre and see an Irish person. You know, people this summer, tourists, American tourists who come to Ireland, because so many of them have roots. They are utterly, I'm hearing, you know, reports back from many who are saying they will never come to this country again. They're absolutely heartbroken. I mean, I cannot go into my own town of Dublin anymore, into the city centre, without actually crying, because it is so heartbreaking. It's like downtown Mogadishu. And I went to Sweden a few years ago to see this with my own. I wanted to see what they had done to Sweden, because it wasn't just like 5 years ago in Ireland, you know, it was still quite normal. And I did. And, you know, I was absolutely brokenhearted by what I saw in Sweden, because both countries were very, very safe as well. I think they were probably the two safest countries. I can't really explain how Sweden, I think because of the homogeneity of the Swedish people, because you did go the route of Protestantism, which we very much resisted here, obviously, and we stayed Catholic. And I do think that that has been a problem, the split, obviously, you know, between Northern and Southern Europe, the fact that we're not united under one faith still has been very problematic. Obviously, that's another argument. So, yes, Ireland was targeted. It probably began in the 80s, actually, you know, where they started this nonsense that we could not survive as an island nation without having an open economy. So the infiltration had started then. We had the likes of Peter Sutherland, who would be sort of the father of globalism. And he very much, you know, was engineering behind the scenes at Bilderberg, bringing over young politicians from Ireland to Bilderberg and getting them trained up. And then our green, in the original meaning of the word, that our natural environment was extremely unpolluted because we'd had no industry here, bar an agricultural industry, which is very successful, not only in Ireland, but all around the world. Our food, our meat, our beef, our lamb, our dairy produce was well known internationally. And so they started telling us that we needed to open up our environment, basically, that we had this natural endowment factor whereby companies could come in and pollute to a degree that they wouldn't, that the land and the waters and the lakes and the rivers were so clean that they could pollute for quite a while before it would become obvious. It was absolutely disgusting what they did. And, you know, now we have these green communists lecturing us every day about having to reduce our carbon emissions, but you never hear them talking about the pharma plants that are in every single town.
Yeah.
Every single town in this country, you could almost say, has some sort of pharma outlet, scamming the public, bringing in foreign workforces, not paying sufficient tax, and most importantly, poisoning their patients.
Yeah, here's a story here about the culling, right? To the we got to meet the climate goals, the carbon bullshit stuff, and they basically want to cull 200,000. I think some estimates were 300,000. Depends on how you slice it, I guess. But and again, that's the big concern against similarities between Sweden and Ireland. I saw basically the politicians turning their backs on the Swedish farmers. We became more and more dependent on imports of food as opposed to being self-sufficient and independent on that front. Mm-hmm. And they started basically, but take just the milk industry, right? Just huge conglomerates forms it down in Europe, and of course they go together, so they're able to sell the milk cheaper, and basically it becomes not profitable for our milk farmers in Sweden to continue doing this. And they don't get backed up, then they don't get help, and so they just urge them to stop farming, don't do it anymore, move on, kind of thing. And now we're seeing how dangerous that could be. Because of that dependency, like any little break in that supply chain, we could see a starvation disaster. I mean, look at Netherlands; they're the second largest food exporter after the United States, and same thing's happening there. They're shutting down about 3,000 farms, and it's like, where's all the food supposed to come from? Are they moving to the printed meats here, or is it the bug protein they're going to wheel out? But I mean, it's like somehow, populations are increasing all the time. They're bringing in more and more people, and they're discouraging farming. This is a disaster waiting to happen, Gemma.
Yeah. I mean, look, anyone, if you fly over Ireland, you will just see green, basically. There's a few pockets of urban centres, but really, you know, it's still, for every Irish person, when they're flying home, it's just, you know, it's always that moment of where you look down upon your homeland and you just think it's so beautiful and still so green. Obviously, many countries look like that from the air, but Ireland in particular. And yet, you know, as you say, like they've ham-fisted, they've handcuffed farmers. Farmers who used to be so knowledgeable of the land and who were, you know, were able to survive difficult climatic conditions, variable conditions, rain. You know, you never knew in Ireland you can have four seasons in a day, which we have, and it's nothing to do with man creating that. It's just the way it is, and a little island out in the Atlantic. So, but since the EU came in and started meddling in agriculture and teaching farmers, you know, how not to farm, how to rely on chemicals and things like glyphosate, which is so dangerous. You know, all of our agricultural products now have, they're contaminated with glyphosate, but you never hear the Greens talking about banning that, at least in Ireland. You don't.
No.
But our farmers now, you know, Henrik, they've become so lazy and they became so reliant on subsidies. They buy these huge machine, big tractors that make them lazy. They don't love the land anymore. They don't love their animals. And they're in it for the money rather than the love of the land. So, you know, if you see the modern day farmer, you just think it's scary because he's probably up to his eyes in debt. He's got this 5G, you know, masts on his land. Everything is being, he doesn't have any idea what's happening, like that the government is coming in to control every single aspect of his life and eventually destroy his livelihood. And it's really sad, you know, for an agrarian country to have lost this. But as I say, it's still very much in our genes. And there's a lot of very good farmers who are developing into organics. And, you know, people all around the country are just growing their own. So, but it's tragic what has happened to agriculture here and the pollution of the environment.
Yeah, you mentioned Peter Sutherland there too. Kind of the World Economic Forum page has him as the father of globalization. I did a piece on this guy way back, and of course, then you had there's some other people over there too. Obviously, we shouldn't forget about people like I never know if it's Bono or Bono, but whatever. You know what I mean? The U2 singer and Bono, yeah, and his buddy there too, right? Jamie Drummond. Do you know who I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. Who he had a very revealing admission when he talked about how he had apparently, together with Bono, helped to push the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. Apparently, they started this group called the One initially, the One Campaign, and with that, they kind of got to a lot of the politicians, and they worked with groups like the UN, obviously, which it's under, but also the World Economic Forum, and they said, "We got to pass this, you know, we're Sustainable Development Goals. That sounds great. That's we got to do that." And those have been tremendously successful, these globalist chills pushing this kind of stuff and garbage. And actually, if you look at the Sustainable Development Goals, I think it's 17 or something like that in total. I forget the number. But it's almost like the majority of them have something to do with migration or open borders or somehow, like, they call it safe and, orderly and regular migration, they call it. The only problem that they have seem to have with all this is, if it's illegal immigration, there could potentially be a legal problem in the future over this or something like that. So you have to make sure that basically the borders remain legally open and that everybody just can walk in safely and orderly, and then it's all good. It's incredible, isn't it?
It's crazy. I mean, look, Ireland is Africa is 360 times bigger than Ireland. India is about 50 times bigger, and we're being told that we have to, you know, take in hordes from these enormous countries. And, you know, it's just like that. You come to Ireland now and you will be absolutely shell-shocked by what you see. And we are, you know, there's only 5 million of us here, if that. Sadly, our women are not reproducing. Our mothers, our grandmothers, maybe our grandmothers would have had at least 10 children on average, and more, in fact, you know, and it was wonderful because we all came from big families. So every Irish family was like a big tribe, really. And you always had loads of cousins and aunts and uncles, and it was a big support network. That's gone now. And the average Irish woman, like the average Italian woman, is barely reproducing. So we are screwed as a people, really, you know, having gone from being the most probably fertile people on the planet to being, you know, up there with the you know, women are being told career, and don't have children. Children are a drag. I'd like to discuss Bono for a moment.
Sure, yeah, go ahead.
It is all very, very interesting. You know, the programming that we as Irish people were subjected to, the social engineering, because, you know, it really was the development of U2, which I see as a sort of a critical turning point in our entire makeup as a people, because we came from being obviously extremely nationalistic, extremely proud of our long history fighting for our freedom, and, you know, very aware of the persecution, the centuries of persecution that we were put through under the crown, defending our right to be Catholics and to stay under the Church of Rome. As much as that's a scary word, we never felt that, and we had a very positive experience of Catholicism. Of course, there's a lot of lies told about child sexual abuse, and a lot of that has been fabricated. I've covered it extensively myself. A lot of these monasteries were infiltrated by communist Jewish elements, and pederasts and paedophiles were put into them to destroy, which was the best thing about Ireland, its Catholic heritage. So we grew up in a Catholic country, and then in the 70s and 80s, the entire culture was shaken by the light, by, you know, this pop culture that came from America and the UK. Obviously, we resisted it a lot longer because we had this sort of moral backbone and, you know, sexual liberation, which, you know, we believe is a form of political control. It's the ultimate weapon of political control, where you force women into the workforce and their children are then taken into the hands of the state, and the state gets to indoctrinate them when there's nobody at home rearing them in the formative years, you know. So, but in Ireland, we held on to that idea that, you know, it's important for mothers to have the opportunity to raise their children, not only for the children's sake, but for society's sake in particular. So we, you two came along, you know, I was growing up in that era, and like suddenly it was like, oh, you know, we're so cool. We Irish actually can be on the world stage now. And we, you know, this is our new culture, and we should abandon all of that repressive Catholic stuff. And, you know, you two were a major weapon in destroying our identity. And, you know, then you look into the connections that these people have. You know, Naomi Campbell, for example, was involved with that band for a long time. We know that she was connected to certain people who have question marks about child trafficking over them, etc.
She went to Epstein's Island, didn't she? Or something like that. There's a link to Epstein, I think.
Allegedly, yeah. Allegedly, so, and I think there's pictures of her with Ghislaine Maxwell, etc. Yep. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then we have this, I don't know if you've seen this clip of Bono during a concert in which he called out to his friend Cardinal McCarrick, arch paedophile. I would say they got dirt on Bono a long time ago, and they've been able to use that against the band, who are complete traitors to this country. They are not Irish. I don't recognize them as Irish. And they've done as much damage to this country, hanging around with warmongers like Blair and Bush, than any politician. And I saw Bono recently. He lives near enough to where I live. And I saw him, and he was with some of his, you know, his minders. And I said, I'm going to take this opportunity now to go up to him and to give him a piece of my mind. And I said to him, you know, where have you been over the last few years when the people were being locked down? And I just got this sort of dead look back, and I looked into his eyes and I realized there's nothing going on here. And he just sort of put his hand on my arm and he said something inane, how are you, something like that. And I realized that it's like there was just nothing behind those eyes, and he was dead, nearly. The face was dead. And to me, he just looked like, you know, as I say, somebody who, he's just a puppet of these people. But they must have got some serious dirt on him. We saw it also with Sinead O'Connor, you know, who's
right. Yeah.
Death, obviously, she was another one, and she has been glorified in the press here, the fake mainstream news here for the last few weeks, to the point of it's nauseating beyond belief. This is a woman who I don't know how many times she was married, three or four, had children with several different men who weren't even her husbands. And I think one of them was her husband. A catastrophe, a disastrous life, disastrous. And she has been pinpointed as the role model of, you know, Ireland, the way Irish women, what Irish women should aspire to being. So figures like that were very much put forward in the last 10, 20 years, 30 years to socially engineer the Irish people. And it's been very successful.
Yeah. So we got you back video here, Gemma. But I wanted to ask you about this article. And you said you hadn't seen it yet, which is crazy, right? Because you were mentioning Sinead O'Connor. And I didn't see this at the time either. It was actually, I started Googling some stuff about her when she passed away here not too long ago. And I was like, huh, look at that. She went after Gemma and John Waters. I didn't know that. She lets loose on Irish right-wing racist was the, what is it, Irish Central had this. I guess she wanted to have you arrested. How about that? And I guess nothing panned out from that. You're still here. You're talking to us.
Yeah, I mean, this is particularly despicable because she has a daughter. She had a daughter with John Waters. So
yes, I know, exactly.
For her to do this to her daughter, it's no skin off my nose. Obviously, I don't know the woman. I never met her in my life. Thanks be to God. But a long, long time ago, back, you know, over 20 years ago, John did have a girl, a daughter with her.
Yeah.
So that was extremely, I mean, I all of these Zed, I call them the Zed-lebrities, you know, the Zed-list celebrities, they have all attacked us, myself and
yeah.
John,
yeah.
Since we challenged the COVID and the masks and the vaccines. So, I mean, it's no surprise to me that she did that, but I don't think I remember it. It may be a distant blur. But look, you know, she was mentally unhinged. It was always heading in this direction. And these people are just puppets that have been put in to socially engineer the Irish people and make them stupid. And, you know, I wouldn't say there was any particular talent in either of these entities, U2 or Sinead O'Connor. I mean, she had a fantastic hit single, but really, what was, I mean, you know, it was a bit cheesy, really, when all is said and done. And you can do anything when you put someone in a studio and manipulate their voice. So, you know, for me, success is about telling the truth,
yep,
standing up to your oppressors, not being afraid to be unpopular and hated. That's the most important Christian value in many ways. It's the lesson that we were taught constantly by Jesus, that you will be persecuted for speaking the truth and standing up against the herd. And we don't have any celebrities that are doing that. They all just, you know, defend
bow
government.
Down. Yeah.
That's why they are celebrities. I've no doubt that that's
exactly.
Very
talented. Yeah. And occasionally when you have them go off kind of their reservation or outside of the playpen that they've been given, I mean, look at Kanye as an example. And sure, he has some issues that he's struggling with too, but look at the reaction, look at what happened, look at how Adidas froze his accounts and all the, you know, I mean, he made a lot of bad choices, including marrying one of the Kardashians. But, you know, be that as it may, they obviously all, you know, turned on him real quick, and a bunch of, you know, Jewish attorneys got involved, and they got to, you know, you got to disassociate from him now, Kim, you know, these kinds of things. But at the end of the day, where's the lie in the majority of the things he said? You know what I mean? Most of the things he said were just accurate observations, and he has a right to vent his frustrations. He didn't say go kill anybody. He was, you know, he has a freedom of expression on his side here, but that's not how society works anymore. Right now it's like, well, that's disinformation. And it really, I mean, think about it. It really escalated under COVID, where all of a sudden now it's dangerous, right? If this is misinformation or disinformation spreads, and now you can kill people. That was kind of the arguments, right? So we have to control the narrative. We have to shut down voices, dissenting views. And if you think about it, that's really the way they pulled this off. I mean, the one legal loophole, not a loophole, but the legal needle, I guess, that they had to jump through to get the vax rollout was to ensure that there was not a single other potential therapeutic on the market that could be used to treat COVID. And that's why there was this intense unified media voice and strict narrative over things like ivermectin, or what was some of the other stuff that was hydrochloroquine, or what was it called? It was a couple of those things. And the, just as a, from a legal point of view, they would have never gotten the emergency use authorization if there was a single product that could have worked to treat this thing, whatever it was, right? And so that's why they just homogenized essentially the messaging on this thing, and they wheeled it out. And lo and behold, would you look at it, now, just the other day, like a week ago or something like that, the FDA, I think it was, in the U.S., the FDA, finally approved ivermectin for treatment of COVID-19. And, like, after all of that, after everything they did, it's incredible, right? But the vax rollout was, like, the one of the number one priorities that they had, I think.
Yeah, well, I never believed that COVID was a thing, because very, very early on, I went into the hospitals to see what was going on.
I was going to bring that up as one of the, I think one of the earlier videos with you that I saw is like, hey, this is great. This woman actually is going into the hospital, filming that there's no one there. There's no one there. Was that in Dublin? Where was that?
No one. Yeah, normally our hospitals, yeah, we went all around the country. Our hospitals normally are, we had the best hospitals in the world at one stage, because they were run by nuns and they kept them spick and span, and they worked for God, not money. But that's another story, and that's all over now. Since the health service has been destroyed, normally our hospitals are creaking at the seams, and you would go in there and the emergency unit, there would be bodies everywhere lying, hanging off trolleys, etc. During a pandemic, though, they were empty. I went in and they were so empty that they were able to identify me. And in one particular hospital, one of the biggest in Dublin, I was nearly arrested. Now, all the hospitals are owned by the public. They're public buildings, and we've every right, there's a few private ones, but we've every right to go in to them. So they were in total panic mode as some of us filmed. Well, what's going on here? Where are all the bodies with this deadly virus? So then also I did one of the first FOIs in the world to ask the government to produce, please, an isolate of the purified virus SARS-CoV-2, because we couldn't really proceed with anything until we could see that this existed. And no government has been able to produce that. Now, they'll say that there is a computer model of it, but that's no use. So to me, you know, viruses are just bits of debris in our body that, you know, our body is full of debris. Our body is constantly working to get rid of all the toxins that we put in it, or that are put in it, not by our choice, but by the government, what the government is doing, be they poisoning our water, our air supply, etc. So that is the role. I mean, I don't even believe necessarily in an immune system anymore. I think we have a detox system that, you know, the body is just constantly trying to clean us out. It cleans itself out. So I no longer buy the whole contagion viral theory. So I have to say that ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine. I grew up in an old fashioned chemist shop. My dad was a traditional pharmacist. He would have been absolutely horrified by all of this. And the last time I used ivermectin was on a horse to worm them. You know, these are traditional drugs that probably have some function. But as far as treating the common cold, you don't need anything like that. You need rest, fasting, and it's your body doing a clean out. It's a great thing. And we shouldn't see sickness as sickness anymore. We should just see it as the body doing its job. And the one thing we should not do is put in toxic chemicals into it and expect it to get better.
I agree. I mean, I mostly agree. I think I agree with you in the sense that it was the rollout or the in the beginning, when they said that this thing was out there, most likely it was not out there. It was just the common cold. I mean, is it possible that they engineered something? I don't know. Who knows at this point? Do they have, I mean, they're working on something in some of these labs. They're doing something. I assume, you know, tens of thousands of biochemists are not sitting around not doing anything, you know, but regardless.
Well, they did switch on the 5G. They did. So Look, we know if we go back to the Spanish flu, we know at around that time they introduced radar. They also introduced, you know, mass vaccination programs to soldiers. So they've upped the radiation levels in the environment significantly during this time frame. You know, while the hospitals were emptied out, there was a massive infrastructural project going on in Ireland and other European countries.
That's true. That's 100% true.
Building these masts, putting up these masts everywhere.
Yep.
So we have been subjected to that. And, you know, a lot of people lost their sense of smell and taste and during the initial scam. And I do believe that that is radiation. Like, we're being subjected to intense levels of electromagnetic radiation, and we are electrical beings, so it's bound to impact.
It's bound to affect us, 100%. No, I agree with you on that. I just
and the first thing is a cold. Like, that's your body's first response, that you'll get a sort of cold. That's the initial detox. Sorry, Henrik.
Oh, no, it's okay. No, don't worry about it. No, I agree with that. I just think if something happened when they rolled out the vaccine, and if it's true what they tell us about the fact that this has in it mRNA, right? It tells your body, instructs your body to produce this supposed spiked protein or whatever, which, you know, is treated as a toxin, supposedly. Point being, it might not have been there from the beginning, but then eventually what you had is when you had the vaccine rollout, then you basically had people becoming factories for whatever this thing is, the spiked protein, and starting to pump that out. And at that point, you started seeing a lot of people getting sick. And so, again, I don't know how to unravel all this and what is what or what is not. All I know is I didn't know a single person when they told us the COVID had, you know, when they declared it a pandemic. I didn't know a single person that had been sick. After the vaccine rollout, it seems that this thing acted as a kind of a self-spreader, right? They have this technology now. They're talking about self-spreading vaccines, that a vaccine as a virus. They've used this on animal populations previously, where basically they give this shot to a few of the animals, and they actually go on and spread that to the other animals without them having been ever been injected. And much of the same way, this could have worked. And the point is, after that, I saw tons of people that were sick. I was sick. We were sick. A lot of people around us were sick, and in ways that we've never been before. So I always saw that the vax was the pandemic. That was the bioweapon. That was the rollout of the disease.
Vaccine is the weapon. There's no question, and has been. You know, the MMR is responsible for the autism pandemic. The HPV is sterilizing young girls and paralyzing them. You know, it's absolutely crippling young girls, and it's another big scam. And then the COVID, obviously, we've seen other ones like Pandemrix, you know, which causes narcolepsy. So vaccines have been the weapon for a long time. Yeah, no question about that.
All right, so we're going to take a short little break here in a little bit, but I want to make sure we plug some of your sources as well, so people know where to go here. I know you said you're working on your website and try to get that updated, but it's there, it's working. You have videos on there, and people can find out what they need on there. It's simply GemmaO'Dorothy.com. We'll have a link to that down below. You are on Getter as well, I believe, right? Is that the main kind of... You were kicked off on Twitter.
Well, I'm banned on Twitter. I was the most retweeted journalist in Ireland before my ban. Now, that was a Twitter survey that was done. I'm not just, you know, saying that. So I was banned at 65,000 followers. And my account has not been reinstated. We have that small Irish Light account, but... yeah, so Getter is where I live stream, also on my website. And I wouldn't mind talking about that article that you had up about order to remove defamatory videos by a court, which I did not do. I did not remove them, and they were not defamatory. They were the truth. So we can talk about that if...
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. I definitely want to ask you more about that. Yeah, so you said this is the, if people do want to follow you on X, you know, that's such a bad name, Twitter, the Irish Light, it's at... Irish Light Paper. It's a smaller account right now, but make sure you follow them over there. And then, of course, you do have the Getter account. I didn't know Getter had live streaming, actually. That's good for them for kicking that off. That's cool.
Yeah, for verified accounts. So they did verify me. I'd say it probably won't last because I am quite critical of the whole MAGA. I mean, Getter is a MAGA.
Yeah, right.
Anti-China. China is the enemy.
Big problem,
Getter.
Yeah.
China, yeah. We know it's not. China is no problem.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, we'll have those links down below, guys, but do check those out. And, of course, the website as well. We'll have that linked up. Here we go, Gemma O'Dorothy. All right. We'll take just a quick break. We'll be right back with more. We'll proceed in part two with Gemma O'Dorothy. If you want to join us, go to redicemembers.com, sign up for a membership, and support our work. It's only $10 a month. If you want a discount on that, get a longer one-time payment. We have 6 months, 9 months, 1 year, or 2 years subscriptions available. And if you get the longer 2 year one, it's almost 35% off. You can also sign up at Odyssey and our Subscribestar. We'll discuss much more with Gemma on the COVID vaccine and its effects. We talk about Jewish influence. We'll hear some on religion from Gemma's perspective as well, and more on what our job is now and what we can do to break free from the prison being built around us right now. Thank you to our executive producers today, T. Lothrop Stoddard, V. Miller, Resin Revolt, Good Luck Lap, Jake, Red Pill Rundown, French 47, Mark Smith, No One Jeeves, President Ubunga, we have Mongoose, William Fox, Angry White Soccer Mom, The Second Wanderer, Operation Werewolf, The Ride Never Ends, Francis Parker Yockey, Dilbob, Last Place Simp, Joseph Hart, Purple Haze, and also Vincent G. Also thanks to our producers, Mr. Walker, 696, Johansson, Leroy Dumond, Snarkpuff, Eyes Open, Mr. Lemry, Urinu, Obadiah Hexwell, Perfect Brute, and Single Action Army. Thank you so much, guys. We appreciate your support. Consider getting one of those tiers. If you want a special shout-out at the end of the show, get a producer or an executive producer tier. Become a supporter and help keep us moving forward. As you know, we don't run ads or have big sponsors. We are 100% funded by our audience. Join us for part two with Gemma. We'll see you on the other side.